This is a Dauntless Media Collective podcast. Visit dauntless.fm for more content.
Religious beliefs to unlearn. 1. I cannot trust myself. I am nothing without God. My desires are sinful. Your spiritual self is all that matters. I am responsible for saving others. There is only one right way to live. I am broken and need to be saved.
And we are back. We are back. So come on, fam, let's do it. This is Profane Faith. This is Profane Faith. Yep, another podcast that engages faith and theology on the margins. We'll be exploring the intersections of the sacred and secular and profane. Look, our aim isn't to settle complex questions, but to engage them thoughtfully and in the process ask better ones, particularly around faith, race, gender, and religion in what is now becoming the fall of the fascist American empire state. Y'all ready? All right, I'll be your host, Dr. Daniel White Hodge. Hey, hey, good people. Hey, 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 hey. Woo, I'm back. I'm back. I'm back. Here we are, folks. First and foremost, for those who are faithful listeners who have reached out, thank you so much for everyone who's texted, sent DMs, just messages here and there. Thank you so much. It really does warm my heart to kind of feel like, okay, somebody's listening. You know what I'm saying? This podcast has been going since 2017. It was something that I started, you know, and as you know, those of you who, you know, haven't been around since day one, you know, this podcast is, you know, something that I've put together myself. I produce, I edit, I do the interviews. It's on me, and it's a labor of love, really. I love working in audio, but the question I'm asking now is this even relevant in 2017? When I started, I already felt like I was behind in the podcast, era, right? Like, had I come out 7 years before, I think I might have had a little bit more, you know, of a bigger audience and stuff, right? But, you know, it just is what it is. So I felt like even 2017, it was a well-saturated market. I think what was missing was just more POCs talking about deconstruction, you know. But now we're in 2025, almost, you know, 10 years later, 8 years later, almost to the date, actually, because I started in August of 2017 was when I released season one, episode one. But now almost to the date, you know, I'm asking myself, I'm just another guy on the mic, ain't I? If we're looking at it from a straight male supremacy perspective. And, you know, for those of you wondering, I've recently been adopting the ideological structure around male supremacy, the way I look at white supremacy, you know, as systems that confer privilege, power, respectability upon a particular group of people. So if we're going to look at white supremacy that way, we got to look at male supremacy. And I think, you know, just yes, there's a lot of men with mics in front of them, and not all of them, I would say the far majority of them, are not necessarily saying anything good or repeating a lot of stuff. So I guess I'm asking, is this show still worth it? And I'm not saying I want to go off and do something. Like, I've gotten the podcast taste, I'm going to have something. Okay. I know there's folks of you out there, oh man, what is Hodge think? What does Hodge think? And I know this podcast provides that space for a lot of people. And I know there's people listening right now who are in churches, who are in spaces, who, you know, that's fucked up. And so this provides a space and a place for that. But I'm just wondering, like, it, you know, is that the case? I mean, because here's the thing. This is what I don't want to do. I don't want to have this podcast be irrelevant, for one. And number two, I would probably say I don't want it to just be, oh yeah, that was Hodges, man. He was cool. You know what I'm saying? He was cool when he first started, but then it just started saying, you know, he just started, you know, everything just started sounding the same. And I don't know. I just stopped listening to it. You know what I'm saying? Right? Because that's a common thing. That's something that I would say about other stuff that's been happening, right? Like, yeah, it was cool first two, three seasons. And then after that, it was like, eh. And so if that's genuinely the case, and this is kind of leading up to just kind of my own, I wanted to fill you in on where I've been, my listening audience. Those of you who know, I like to process a lot and share with folks. That's why I always tell people, like, hey, man, what you been going on? Like, if you really want to know and you want to do the lazy person's, you know, by not calling, like, you know, you could always call a brother and we could FaceTime. We'd do whatever shit. If you in the Chicagoland area, we can see each other. The podcast serves as kind of this, you know, written, if you will, record of, you know, of what's happening, particularly with, you know, different events. You can go back through the different years and look at different, you know, major events that have happened since 2017. I've tried to cover those. It's just in recent years, and now it's every day. Every day there's a life-changing event. Right. Supreme Court's ends last week with all kind of bullshit renderings. Right. We're seeing on a daily basis that. And again, if those of you who are paying attention, we're seeing on a daily basis just the social constructs of society. Things don't matter. Laws don't matter. Judges can say certain things. Trump don't have to do them. And you're seeing in real time just how all these constructs, right, paying taxes, bills, you know, all these things we made up as humans. We made up. And so, you know, I want to provide some space for that. But, you know, again, I'm asking the question, is it just time to retool? Does profane faith need to die and become something else? Because I don't want to be that old dude up there and people saying, like, man, he's had that podcast and And, you know, and that's it, you know, co-host. I don't know. So I'm putting that out there. I know I've taken up already 6 minutes on that shit. But you let me know. You know, that's just something I'm just putting out there. And I think it's just something that I ask every year. What's the relevancy? Should we retool? Should we not? Yeah. So I don't know. But there's been some new developments in White Hodge land, and just in terms of who I feel like I am becoming and just myself in general. Here in the year of our Lord, 2025, you're listening to this in real time. I was diagnosed early spring, or actually late winter, early spring, with adult onset ADHD. And for those of you who don't know, ADHD, and it's now that I'm getting into and learning, and particularly with components of neuro divergence, excuse me, being an atypical type of person, it was not something that always sat with me. Like, I knew it, I respected those folks and understood, but I never saw myself in that light. For the bulk of my life, including even when I started therapy, I always felt like I just didn't have the language. And I want you to hear me, because it's just like, oftentimes we're in a space and the body feels it and it's sending you those messages, but we don't have the language, the discourse, the rhetoric, if you will, for that. And so for me, it's like when I started therapy, I knew something was going on, but for the bulk of my life, I have felt like there was something wrong with me. Okay. The bulk of my life, I have felt like I was just an oddball, that I thought differently and that there was something wrong with me. And add in religious language, religious guilt, evangelicalism, Christianity, at least the way it's been formed now, is very, very oppressive, right? You have to deny your body. You have to deny anything that your body tells you. And just now at age 51, I am learning to believe my body. Okay. I am learning to believe what my body tells me about things. And as I have made more space for that ADHD, gotten some medication, working on through things in therapy, as I have gotten that, I have become way more, what's the word that I'm trying to use here? Basically, I've made the space for my body, because my body has been in a don't act like this, don't act like that, put on this mask, put on this, you're weird. And now I'm finally saying, no, you're not weird. You're not, you know, out there like some, you know, ostracized leper. You are worth something. You are much more than you are. And so, and you know what, movie really helped a lot for me, and this is going to sound wild to some of y'all, is The Accountant. There was a part two that just came out. It's basically a movie. Ben Affleck is in it as the main character. He plays this guy who, you know, who's an accountant, but he is neuroatypical, and I believe he's like autistic or has Asperger's, and he's just able to figure things out, but it makes him socially awkward. And I feel like that just helped me realize, like, for example, if you haven't seen the film, I highly recommend it. I think they're on Prime or Netflix or one of these goddamn demonic subscription services that we all serve. But what got me was like, one of the things was like, you know, finishing, completion. Like, I always felt like when I did things, especially stuff like construction, where it's like there's a process and you're doing things, like when I'm involved with that, like my attention is laser focused. But if you come and tell me to, or ask me to do something else, for example, my mind then breaks that concentration and I feel flustered, anxious, depressed, all within, you know, a 20-second environment. But again, not knowing that, not having the language, when I'm 15, I think there's something wrong and I act out on that. I become angry. I snap on people. I become short. Now that I understand this and better, you know, can engage with it, I can begin to regulate emotions, okay? I can begin to soothe myself much quicker and much better in real time, and begin to recognize like, oh, wait a minute, I need to finish this project. There was a scene in there where Ben Affleck's character has to finish things. Otherwise, he loses it. And it just doesn't go well, right? There's this whole thing. And I get it, right? It's like, it's not like the world has to just bend over to everybody who has a certain affliction. No, but the world has also been the extreme on the other end. It's like, this is the right way to think. This is the right way. This is the typical way you should be acting, and anything outside of that and divergent of this is bad, wrong. And so ADHD has helped me. Well, it's helped in my relationship with my spouse. There was just a lot of times where I just felt like I forgot. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be mean, but that also adds on to the labor of women. We're going to get to some of the gender stuff here later in the season. It's been miraculous. I've also been doing a lot of body work lately as well. Somatics, psychosomatic body work, and basically releasing a lot of trauma. I recently found that I've had sexual trauma in my life. My first sexual experience was traumatic. I've remembered it all my life. I was probably 5 years old, and I used to play with this other little kid, Amy, who was four. And I remember, like, you know, first few times we played, it was just regular, right, whatever. But, you know, she always like wanted to play house or whatever. I didn't think nothing of it. But I remember it started getting more and more like aggressive. Like, we're going to play house again. I'm going to be the mommy. You're going to be the daddy. When you come home from work, I want you to get on top of me. And, you know, and as a five-year-old, like, okay, all right, what are we doing now? And so I remember, you know, I went over to her house. My mom and her mom were friends, and they were talking in the kitchen, and we were in the bedroom playing. And then she was like, I'm going to go in the bathroom, and I want you to come in like 2 minutes. I'm going to say, come in. I was like, okay. And so, you know, I'm playing. I'm not thinking anything of it. I'm just thinking, this is another game. And I remember calling me, and I remember going in and seeing it. She was literally standing in there buck naked. And she was like, I want you to put this pencil, all right, in my vagina. And at 5 years old, I'm thinking, whoa. And I remember my body reacts right? So it's like instant erection. I remember that. So I remember thinking, okay, this is, wow, this is crazy. But I remember the fear that entered my body. And this is the part I want to focus in on. Because that fear imprinted onto my pelvic region, somatically speaking, okay? And I have held that shit for 40 however years. I don't do the math. And it hasn't been until I begin to unpack my pelvic region and begin to really do some of the work in there and to begin to release the pressure, the things, that I'm beginning to see actual, actual traumatic bond release. And it's not easy. It's all hard. But one of the shows that I've been watching that really helps put a lot of this shit into perspective is Hoarders. Because all of those people have experienced major trauma, loss, some accident, somebody did something to them. They, you know, there was somebody on the show the other day who they lost their brother in Vietnam, and all these years later, they're still holding on to that. And like literally their entire house is just filled with stuff. It was eventually condemned. Like the whole, the infrastructure was falling apart. And that got me, and I was just like, huh, I got to get at this shit right now, man. Because I felt like I've spent my entire life working for the community, working for other people. And yeah, I've gotten therapy along the way, and that's helped. That's helped a lot. That's provided a good framework. I don't think I could be doing the body work that I'm doing now without having the other tools of therapy in place. But it's a process. You can't see people get killed right in front of you and think you're going to be okay. You can't walk past dead bodies, okay? And just think, ah, that's fine. Right? The trauma of being shot at in a closed space environment, having shootouts inside of a house, that fucking shit is traumatizing. Being hunted by the Ku Klux Klan, having to hide in a neighbor's bush because you know white supremacists are out there with a fucking truck and they want to kill you. That is fucking traumatic. Okay? So I've been working on that. What you think about that, huh? Come on now. Oh my gosh, fam. The work of personal development, and this gets into all kind of shit, man, because bell hooks, god damn that woman, god rest her soul, but man, that woman could I'm reading the book The Will to Change, The Will to Change, and she goes in the first few pages, she's talking about how, like, basically men hate women, and just talks about how, just how the presence of men, right? Like, why do women need protection? Why do women need, you know, somebody to walk with them at night? It's other men. And so this has just been getting at me. Like, I'm just like, wow, I gotta do my fucking work. And that's releasing a lot of that shit, man. And it doesn't, when I say releasing, it doesn't mean like, oh, I'm healed, I never have to think about it again. That's the mythology, I think, of current Christianity, is that it's going to fuck with you. And, you know, once you've cured and been healed, that's it. It's over with. And if it comes back, that's on you, you fucker. Right? That sins, that shit's on you, you motherfucker. So I'm just trying to push past that. And that, I'm just naming the major things. I'm not even talking about all the medium things that affected me. You know, religious trauma, right? Don't masturbate. Can you imagine, right, that, you know, and we can talk more about masturbation and just the release of that. A good masturbating session is usually what I do before I go and do all my body work. Because, again, biologically, when a man ejaculates, okay, there's a release of things and there is just a sense of rest. And I'm like, okay, great. I can do that. I can lean into my body work and I can release more trauma. There's something about that. And see, this is what I'm talking about when I say I'm redefining what it really means to have a spiritual life in a deconstructed space. Okay. So these are some of the things I've been working on, fam. I had a good cry session. I haven't cried much in my life. And here's the other thing. The things that's really helping a lot, cannabis. I'm just going to just keep it 100 with y'all. Cannabis, okay? God, I think about 30 years ago when I was like so against all of this stuff. I remember campaigning against legalizing weed in California during my, you know, fundamentalist years. I remember, you know, speaking ill of all the things that, you know, that weed had become and just buying into that stereotype. And fam, I'm telling you right now, I had a session. I took some good shit, man. I had a nice, good cocktail. And I remember watching WALL-E and thinking about the future, man. And then it just hit me like a ball, like, in my own life, in my dreams, like my body has been telling me for a long time, you have got to unpack some shit in your life, okay? And in my dreams, I would have these sessions where I just ball cry, like and it's just like a release. And there's a release, but it's not a full release because it's in a dream. You're in that astral state, that astral plane. So there is some relief and you're identifying, like your body is saying, bro, you gotta deal with this. But it wasn't until I got a combination of the cannabis, combination of the body work, then it just hit me and it was just Niagara Falls for like 4 hours, fam. 4 hours. And it was at night too, because I'm a night owl. And so, whoo, that was good. That was a huge release. And as a result, right, it's like lost 21 pounds. I'm feeling lighter on my feet. I can think better. The meds that I'm on, I'm not on Adderall and, a Ritalin either. You know, those make me too. I forget the name of the medication I'm on, but my point is that there's been some healing and it's a process. And I don't say all of this stuff to make you feel like, hey, I'm better. You're not, you suck. 'Cause you haven't done shit. No, I'm just simply telling you, this has been my process. Everybody's got to do their process. And I think that's the fallacy, again, of where we find ourselves religiously is that, and this is one of the reasons why I refuse now to tell people, like, quote unquote, my story, because people use that rather than just seeing it for what it is, embracing it, valuing it for what it is. People turn it into a fucking weapon and then say, if you don't do the exact same things that Brother Hodge did, you're going to burn in hell. And that's just not the case, right? We're all different. So I'm just letting you know where I've been, what's been going on, what's been taking up my time. I really don't do social media anymore. memes is all I do. I don't know how that's going to affect this podcast, but it just is what it is. But here we are. And so I wanted to kind of unpack some of those and also unpack a little bit about where we find ourselves currently. Y'all ready? I don't know.
Time is the only currency you spend without knowing your balance. Use it wisely. So much of the work of oppression is policing the imagination. Sadia Hartman.
American democracy under threat because of this stuff.
Under threat? Does it exist, Mark? I don't think it exists. It's a veneer. It's the end of the Roman Empire. You have the symbols, the iconography, and the language of a democracy, but internally, corporations and oligarchs have seized all the levers of power. I looked at this election as a battle between corporatists and oligarchs. Corporatists, the Democrats, they want something very different from oligarchs. Corporatists want stability, they want decorum, the kind of decorum that Obama had or Bush had, or as Bush was an idiot, but at least he had some, you know, they could clean him up a little bit. And Biden, you know, whatever his cognitive failings were, because they want stability, especially in terms of trade agreements, because they make investments overseas, takes a while for a return on a profit. Corporatists want something different from oligarchs. Oligarchs are about chaos. They're about, as Steve Bannon said, deconstructing the administrative state. Why? Because it is a pure form of rentier capitalism. And by that, I mean that they make their money by setting up toll booths, Amazon, you know, all of these digital media platforms. It's not about producing goods. And the more that the state is deconstructed, that's why they want to abolish the Department of Education. Everything that we need as a civil society becomes privatized. And you see it in I wrote a book called America, the Farewell Tour begins in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where everything, the sewer system's privatized, the parking authority is privatized, the electricity is privatized, and of course they've jacked up the rates, and the services are not very good. And they want to privatize the post office so we can have a dysfunctional post office like the UK, which is privatized. And so that's what oligarchs want, and the oligarchs have won. They won. And but that's what this battle was about. In terms of if we strip away its the kind of trivia or the cultural differences between the two parties, that at its core was what it's about. And so we have, as you point out, I mean, we have now an oligarchic system. But as Aristotle wrote, once you create an oligarchic system with those kinds of inequities, then you are only two choices: are tyranny or revolution.
People will come to love their oppression, to adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think. Aldous Huxley.
Hey everyone, I'm Nate from the Full Mutuality podcast. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into this show. We're so grateful that you've decided to spend your time with us. Seriously, Dan, Gail, Jessica, Kathleen, Scott, and the rest of us here at the Dauntless Media Collective couldn't produce content like the show you're listening to without your support. I'd also like to invite you even further into the conversation. Right now, there are some great discussions happening over in the Dauntless Media Collective Discord server. If you're interested in chatting with other folks who are deconstructing and decolonizing the oppressive traditions that they came from, please feel free to hop on into the server. If you don't know what Discord is, it's a place where communities can gather online for chatting on a wide variety of topics. In our Discord server, we have channels devoted to general deconstruction conversations, some meme sharing, therapeutic venting about whatever religious bullshit you're currently dealing with, and even a channel specifically devoted to talking about the latest episodes of the podcast you're listening to right now. I hope you'll join us. You can log in directly to the Dauntless server by clicking the link in the show notes or heading to dauntless.fm and clicking the link in the top banner. See you there.
Because if you accept that it's fascism, then you have to organize, and you have to organize with people that you might not necessarily like. Denying that it's fascism is a purely academic pursuit, right? If you deny it's fascism, what you can do is you can sit at your office and you can edit the volume about how it's not fascism. That's just about my colleagues. But more broadly speaking, if you deny it's fascism, then you can imagine, okay, the normal pathways of politics are going to work. Somehow things are going to self-correct. The moment you accept that it's fascism, you have to organize. You have to take action. You have to organize, and you have to organize with people who agree with you and people who don't completely agree with you. And this is part of the answer now to the question, because the way that you beat fascism is with coalitions. The way that you beat fascism is that you get to a majority by including people who don't agree about everything. A clear majority, it has to be a clear majority, because they're ruthless, and also they may control aspects of the state. So the way that you pull back is that you get a coalition, right? This is Poland in 2023, for example. The way that you pull back is you get a coalition which can win an election.
Please try to remember that what they believe, as well as what they do and cause you to endure, does not testify to your inferiority, but to their inhumanity. James Baldwin.
Fascism always is an attempt by the right to resolve a crisis of its own era, right? So in the 1930s, they were attempting to resolve, you know, in Germany, the humiliations of the First World War, the impacts of the Great Depression, and to propose a unity in the face of that, you know, for the in-group.
That is Naomi Klein, Canadian author, social activist, and filmmaker, known for her political analysis and support of ecofeminism. She is the author of a brand new book called Doppelganger. She talks about that and just where we find ourselves this day and age with the Trump regime.
But our moment is different, and one of the things that makes it different, I mean, if you think about fascism in the 1930s, this is before the atomic bomb. It's before they understood climate change. And we are in a moment where our elites, whether they admit it or not, do understand that our economic model is at war with life on Earth. What unites this kind of strange Frankenstein coalition that Trump represents, where he's bringing together these, you know, the richest people in the world who have ever existed with, you know, many working class people? So what binds the vision? They all have given up on this world. Like, they all have bought into a kind of apocalyptic fever.
So it's clear that this group has given up on the world. This is probably one of the most clearest examples in gathering of material and information that I've read in a while in regards to where we find ourselves, some of the implications of it, and just why it seems like everything is just going bad. This is calculated. This is part of the process. This is part of the plan. And so if you haven't been paying attention, if you haven't been keeping up with the history of where this was going, then it could appear like this is just random, or it could appear like, quote unquote, this is not the America I grew up in. Here's what Naomi has to say about all that.
I think a lot of very good scholarship attempting to understand authoritarianism today, whether it's Trump or figures like Duterte or Modi, have looked at similarities between these far-right figures and, say, Mussolini or Hitler, and have taken a kind of a checklist approach of looking at what is similar to the past, right? And I think there's a lot of value in that. But the risk of it is that it doesn't look at what is new and what is particular to our time. Fascism always is an attempt by the right to resolve a crisis of its own era. But our moment is different, and one of the things that makes it different, I mean, if you think about fascism in the 1930s, this is before the atomic bomb. It's before they understood climate change. And we are in a moment where our elites, whether they admit it or not, do understand that our economic model, and I've written books about this and talked about it with you in the past, is at war with life on Earth, right? And they are barreling down this road of more and more extraction of fossil fuels, of all kinds of, you know, basically anything they can extract from this Earth and turn into energy and money.
Naomi goes on to say how, you know, this particular group, they only really see white, Euro-centered individuals as the ones to save. You know, niggers, spicks, coons, chinks, wasp, dagos, you know, them. Nah, we ain't gonna cover them. All right. And the reality of it is that you see this a lot. And again, if you have been following the signs, and the signs are not that hard to follow, these are not out there just oblivious to anyone. Shit's on YouTube, shit's on Twitter. These things are out there. People have no shame about it. And people have been talking about this, particularly people like Steve Bannon, for easily 18 years.
Also, this idea of a very technologically advanced startup country, right? You know, Israel has marketed itself that way. And a lot of these tech companies want to do that in San Francisco. You know, they want to push everybody out who doesn't agree with them, who's poor, who have more needs, and create their kind of corporate privatized utopia. The idea of a company town is not entirely new, right? And Disney had Celebration Florida, and, you know, there are lineages to this, right? Colonial lineages to this. You know, I live in Canada, which started as the Hudson's Bay Company, right? So it was a company before it was a country. So there is some precedent for this. I've been following this out of the corner of my eye, Amy, because this is where the libertarians have been going for a while. Peter Thiel has been obsessed with this idea. It's exiting the nation and just starting your own country, where you can set your own tax level, you can make your own regulations, and these little corporate countries will compete with one another to try to attract capital. Right? Even though Trump talks about a golden age, there really isn't a future that the base believes in. You know, and this is what I've learned by consuming far too much MAGA media, Amy. They envision a future of endless war, right? And this is why they're bunkering down. This is why they're buying ready-to-eat meals to last. This is why they're buying gold and crypto. They think the whole thing is going down. So they don't believe in the future, is the bottom line. And that is I think I've been in a lot of progressive spaces over in recent months where we've talked about building these very broad coalitions, including with people who we don't entirely disagree with. If we have the courage really to look at the bleakness of what they believe in, which is an apocalyptic future, then we have our work cut out for us. Being the people who actually believe in this realm, in this world, in the beauty of creation and in of each other.
The reality of all this is that we have some major issues. We've been having some major issues, but now it's decision time. Now it's down to what the fuck we gonna do? Are you gonna sit by and just let it happen? Become a victim? Go off to some of these camps that they're talking about? Maybe you'll become indoctrinated. I don't know. Maybe you'll just, you know, for that survival instinct that humans have, that's real, fam. And, you know, people will succumb to be like, I want to survive. I want to live. So I'll just do whatever I got to do to live. So what are we going to do? I don't know. Naomi Klein talks a little bit more about where we should be heading or thinking about, because it's grave, it's bad. So there's no 5-point solution. There is no hey, if you go read this book, we'll be able to get out of this. Nah, she's breaking some good shit down. What Naomi is talking about, and really what Naomi is, as any good scholar does, is she lists out all of her sources and lists out the material of who she built from. This stuff comes right out of liberation. And if you want to go even further, liberation theology. Being liberated, being someone who stands in the gap and speaking truth to power. This is the moment for it. This is where the rubber meets the road. No one's coming to save us, okay? I hate to be the one to bear the bad news to all of us, but no one is coming to save us. No one, there isn't. And here's the thing. I know for those of us who still believe in kind of this deity and this kind of savior, let's go through history a little bit here. I recently read that Ryan Coogler is working on I think it's a documentary. I'm not sure if he's using it as a documentary or an actual film, but I believe it's a documentary on Katrina in 2005. Think about the horrific events that happened there. And I'm not talking about the actual hurricane. Some of you may be too young to remember. You'd be like, whoa, Katrina, 2005, a Category 5 hurricane hits directly. It's like smack on to New Orleans. And the hurricane was one thing, destroyed a lot of things, dropped a lot of water. However, the levees that were keeping the, you know, the water out and all that stuff, I mean, they broke. And then that's ended up flooding basically all the black neighborhoods, the poor black neighborhoods in that. And so Katrina was horrible. Let's go back, you know, even further. 1992, LA uprisings. Who came? No one. No one. We say, well, damn, what about, hold up, in 2005, you know, they eventually got saved, right? Oh, my gosh. You know, and you think about the civil rights movement. Think about all the horrendous things that happened to people of color. All the shit that you don't even hear about. The stories that are told at grandma's table. The stories and the narratives that were seen. You know, the people who were killed that never made the news. Okay? Let's go back to World War II. All right. You know, where was this supernatural God? We have to ask these questions, fam. We have to ask, where is this God of the universe? And part of it is our own understanding, of what it takes for us as a society, as a culture, as a people to be coddled. You heard that right. Go on pause, hit rewind. Understanding what it takes to really maneuver your own emotions, right? What are the things that we tell ourselves that eventually we think, you know, will be the truth, right? This is for all of us. This is shit I'm telling myself. This is Christopher Nolan's Memento like a motherfucker, right? We tell ourselves one thing, we lie to ourselves, right? I am the main character, I'm the good person, I'm avenging, right? You think about Memento, I'm avenging my wife's death, and come to find out in the end, you're the one that killed her. Yeah, yeah. And you've been living this lie. You've been, you know, looking for, what was this, John G, you know what I'm saying? You're a John G, you know, you'll fit my story well, right? And then at the end of the movie, he's like, you know, I have to believe that the things that I tell myself, right, are true. We all look in the mirrors. We all have lies that we tell ourselves. I'm no different. That's how the movie ends. That's where we're at, fam. What do we tell ourselves, you know? Who's coming to save us? In the past, sure, you know, America. But America's the one that's been leading the charge in imperialism. So, fam, the question now becomes, I think for a lot of people, they're starting to realize, okay, something's wrong. And if that's where folks are at, okay. But you're about 35, 40 years late to the game. And even with that, if you want to go back even further, people were talking about this back in the 20s and 30s. Listen to some of the old James Baldwin recordings. Malcolm X, you don't even have to dig deep to go to YouTube or any of these places and just look those talks up. And I would say listen to the audio, because sometimes it's vexing to watch a black and white film, you know what I'm saying? And the visuals of that in your mind, right? And at a very subconscious level, right? Our brain is telling us, that was then. That was back then. You don't have to worry about that shit, man. You know, you good. You good. That was old. It's what Slavoj Zizek talks about, and you know, for climate change. Like, you won't understand what climate change is until the shit from the dump and the sewage is at your front steps. And by that time, it's too fucking late. Okay? But go down to the dump. Have you ever been to the dump? Your city's dump. Like, just look at it. Take it in. Like, ask yourself, where does all that garbage go? Today in our place was garbage day. So I'm just thinking, just in our section, our little corner of the city, all that garbage. That's a lot. I would imagine it's in the tons, several thousands of tons, just in this little section. That's not the city of Chicago. So what happens then? Where do we put that? What does that mean? Things are going to have to change, fam. The reality of it is that the people that are running this country realize that too. They see it, okay? They see it. And they're deliberately trying to crash the system for a lot of different reasons. From a secular perspective, you crash the system and you rebuild it in your own image. Again, Bannon, Miller, John Miller, I mean, all these people have been saying this stuff for a long time. We have got to get rid of all this shit with diversity, all this shit with race and ethnicity. We got to get rid of all that shit. In fact, kill them off. The same thing that's happening in Palestine right now, it will be happening here in the U.S., particularly with black people. Black people are the countryless citizens of this institute. Like, where are we going to go? When you talk about illegal immigrants, right? People usually assign the racial moniker of Mexican to all of it, but it's not that. But people can go back to their countries in certain regards. Like, yes, I know that they can go back to shit. And if you've been living in the U.S., I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about origin. I'm talking about land that is yours, where you have a history. Think about somebody from Sicily. Think about somebody from Greece who can sit there and say, this is my land. This has been in my family for thousands of generations. Okay? We don't got that here in the United States as black people. This is it. The shit is it. We were born on this land, on this miserable land. This is it. And so when we start to think about it, it's like, what is happening with Israel and Palestine? It's horrific, but it's also a gut check, right? Because if people think that's okay, they'll allow anything. Though, for real, they'll allow anything. You think, well, how could that be the Jews? That's a whole nother conversation right there. You start getting into Semitics and who are the people who are Semitics, right? I mean, over half the Arab world is Semitic. So careful when you use that word and that language, particularly when you have white Jewish people telling you that, and that they're the chosen people from a book they wrote. Okay? I mean, come on, let's just, and that's with any religious denomination, right? It's like when they say, oh, our God is a righteous God, or what is it, an awesome God. Who told you? We're our Bible that we all put together. Because once you figure out, right, that the Gospels weren't written in real time, the Bible was written by all men, there is no divineness to it. The Councils of Nicaea, of course, chose their own political and cultural ideologies at the time. And if you understand the ethno-life history of story and narrative and how stories change over time and are incorporated, if you understand how all those things come together, once you comprehend all that and put it all together, you begin to realize, wow, religion really is a sham. No one really knows what happens when you die. And don't get me wrong, I do still believe there's divine out there. I do believe that there's more to life than what we see in front of us. But that's the thing I love about science. Science will at least admit that. Most of the times, religion won't. Okay? And religion will begin to tell you, hey, you know, go think this way. And if it doesn't work, just push it a little harder. It'll work eventually. The reality of it is that we're living in times of which, if you study the notes and you study the tea leaves, you know that we are headed for a very violent intersection. I'd love to believe that intersection could be alleviated, could be avoided. We can go around it. But unfortunately, we're there. And so I don't have dates. I don't have timelines. I have some estimations. There are several works that are out there. I've talked about it on this show before. I would definitely point you, if you're just trying to get your head around a lot of this, I'm going to point you to Naomi Klein's text, Doppelganger. It just came out. It's a really good read, well-informed, well-written, and it cites a lot of the things that I'm talking about. There's another guy, I'm trying to remember his name. I've talked about him on this show before. It goes by Peter, he's German. I want to say Peter Lick or Peter Bergman, but I don't think that is it. His name, I'll have to find that name. I apologize for not being able to come up with that right away. But my point being is that he's done work on, you know, 800,000 years of civilizations. What have they looked like? And his data is nothing short of amazing. In fact, when I went on the website, their sites were so, I don't think they had gotten the HTTPS, the security thing yet, like, hooked up, right? I think a few years back, everybody had to go HTTPS for your website. And if you still had HTTP, it was like wigging out and stuff. So anyways, all that to say, when I first went on the website, it was so brand new. Like, you know, it was that my spam software was picking it up as a spam, but it was like, no, man, just the data sets alone of what he looked like, you know, and looking at things like how people survive, what do people do to live, what is your proximity to water, what is your proximity to food, because you got to remember, it wasn't but within the last 100 years that we have grown to where we're at now in regards to just basic needs of survival. Right. There was no running water. There was no electricity. There was no 7-Eleven. And so it shaped a different way of humanity. So looking at how humans integrate, but it's like, bam, once you introduce technology and give it to a species that is already dealing with at the time, you know, particularly with the Eurocentric mind that says we need to conquer, we need to divide, we need to plant a flag on this thing, right? That type of ideology, you know, along with corruption and the ongoing just pillaging of the land for one's personal gain is, you know, it set us on this crash course and stuff. And so it will end in violence, whether it's next year, next week. It's building towards that. And part of what I want to do this season is give y'all pointers. I'm doing shit on my own, but I want my listeners and viewers to be fully aware and knowledge of what's going on. For example, how do you get water out of thin air? How do you know to look? Where do you look for water? We are headed for water wars. That I know for sure. That within the next decade, we are going to be seeing that. Think about how hot it is now. Every summer on record is the hottest we've ever had. And every summer on record now keeps beating out the last summer. So what do you think that's leading to? So I'm just here, like I said, I'm just trying to wake us up a little bit. I don't know who all is listening to this. Maybe the feds, maybe y'all listening. Y'all want, if you listening, man, really? Someone has convinced you that you have more in common with a billionaire, with Bezos, than you do me. And you're over there thinking you just doing your job. And that's the thing, that's with all of us though, right? Right? We have been convinced for a long time, right? Hard work will get you where you want to go. We got to believe that billionaires are smart and they have all the answers. Surely they know billionaires should not exist. There's a fundamental crises to have one person surmount that type of money. These are the richest people that we know of in history, okay? That doesn't just, I mean, these people aren't necessarily the most ethical people. Well, they're not. You can't be. And I know for a lot of people, it's like, oh, but how can you judge? And, you know, hey, if they earned that money, they didn't. They didn't fucking earn it. That's the thing. You do. You work your 9 to 5. You work your ass off. These people are not. These people have squeezed out other businesses so they could get more. These people have taken out entire cultures, people, parts of the land, all for money. Is that going to be what we're headed to, where, you know, UV rays are cutting into us? You have to, you know, there's only certain hours you can go out in the day. Corporations run everything. But here's the thing. I'm just going to put it out there. These folks are not just going to willingly give up power. These folks are not just going to willingly, because you were nice to them or you wrote a nice letter or you protested out in front of their business. They are not willingly going to give up power. They're not. Okay? So, what does that mean? I don't know. I know what history has said it means. And I know what history has done with people who have risen up, right? The common folk who rise up, because we always outnumber the rich. But the rich have resources, right? Now, here we get into the whole, you know, you want to do the Hunger Games, where you want to do Squid Games, what the fuck you want to do? Rich people who have means and have the opportunity will utilize that. Private security, right? You know, all the gated communities, all the technology, right? All the things, if you have that type of money. But what we know is that those people don't possess any more power. They don't have lasers. They can't float. They just got money and they know how to convince people. That's the social construct of it, right? And people fall into line. People, there's components of soldiers. It's the psychology of the soldier. There's the psychology of people who just want to maintain, right? Just the basic line of living. I don't want to cause any problems, right? The people who say, I'm following orders. Shit. So, what are you gonna do? I don't know, but it's not gonna get better. I'm just here to tell you, and I would imagine a lot of you who've listened to this show know that. But you got to look at the evidence, and I think we got to seriously begin to ask ourselves, how do we organize around this? Because we're gonna have to organize with people we don't agree with. And I'll put that out there on the table. You know how much I talk about race on this show, and how much, you know, it impacts not only just me, but all kinds of people. I would say that needs to take a backseat to class and socioeconomics at this point. Not that we need to get rid of it, but right now we are in a class war. Now we're meant to think, right, that the Mexicans, the Haitians, and even the poor rural whites, poorly educated, are my enemy, but they're not. They're not. The reality of it is that billionaires have convinced us that they are the problem. Immigrants are the problem, and that people of color are the problem. And then the reason we keep talking about all this shit is we gotta let the history be, right? It's like motherfuckers who say, oh, never forget 9/11, but then are quick to fucking tell you, man, oh, slavery happened so long ago. Get over it. I don't own slaves. Right? I can say the same thing, right? It's like, well, I didn't lose anybody in 9/11. I didn't have anybody on those planes, so what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? I think we got to begin to rethink how we organize and how we put things together. And here's the thing. Violence cannot be taken off the table, because that will be a modus of understanding that people will begin to, people respect power. And we're headed to that point. We're moving beyond negotiations at the table. In fact, I would say that we're past that. So far fucking past that, that we have a fucking detention camp being built right now in fucking Florida, okay? With fucking alligators in the moat, okay? So don't come at me and tell me, no, we need protection. That needs to look, and it needs to look a certain way, and it's just where we're at. I don't want to live that way, and far too many black people are still stuck in an Obama era mindset. In that sense that, hey, if we just work hard, if we just, you know, hey, you know, or even referencing the Obama era, that shit is past, long past. And the reality of it is that folks like Obama, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Kendrick Lamar, these people are rich. And I hate to tell people, tell y'all folks, they don't give a shit about you. They may act like it, but they don't. And the people that did give a shit about us, Nipsey Hussle, Tupac, people like that, they're dead. And so it's a very interesting space that we find ourselves in. Components that Stokely Carmichael and Angela Davis and a lot of the front runners of the civil rights movement who lived and breathed it daily were talking about right back, you know, 50, 60 years ago, about having political influence, having black business people, you know, that somehow that would make a difference. I get that ideology. I thought the same way for a long time, too, until I kind of took my nose out the rose garden for a second and was like, wait a minute. We've been having rich black folk for a long time. Why are we still living in the same fucking conditions? So we got a lot to ask. We got a lot to engage with, fam. This whole episode, I was really trying to get us to think a little bit about where we at, right? The start of last season, I know I did kind of a State of the Union, but I just really wanted to talk with y'all and give y'all a little heads up. Again, the theme this season is really looking at what are we going to do? What the fuck are we going to do? And I'm not just talking about praying, because that shit ain't going to do nothing. That's going to get you killed. That's what it's going to do right there. If you're saying, oh, well, let's just pray, that's going to fucking get you killed. You're going to be in the church house when those fucking militias bust it down in your black church and shoot all of you and then hang you outside to show other nigger dissidents that they too should fall into line. And if you think that's a far off fantasy that I'm bringing up, yo, you haven't been paying much attention. And I'm not trying to be like elitist here. I'm just simply trying to say things are different. 2016 changed everything. Okay? Cambridge Analytica, the rise of the public knowing what was happening with their data. The fact that social media went from being this kind of darling to really a fucking demon. That wants to fucking, you know, seep your soul out one fucking pixel at a time and another data point at a time, right? So, fam, we're in a world of shit. We have been for a long time. And in history, I don't believe that, like, the world is ending. I don't believe that God is coming back. I don't believe any of that. I believe that society could collapse tomorrow and the earth will be just fine. In fact, I believe that the earth would be like, whoo, thank God. Thank God, because I've been needing to take a rest from y'all motherfuckers for a long time. So I don't believe that. But I do believe that in terms of if we're going to see any semblance of a society that we think we want, you're going to have to fight for it. And it's going to be more than just signing petitions and calling your fucking congressperson. OK, so it's time. It's time, fam. This is it. What would you have done in Nazi Germany right now? And people keep saying that, and it's the truth right now. What are we doing? And that's going to look different. I'm not here to judge. Some people going to be in the streets. Some people going to be in the boardroom. Some people going to have to be in the Underground Railroad. But we are headed into some shit. And here's the thing. Even if Trump dropped dead today, people keep talking about, oh, who's going to assassinate him? Like, ah, dude, No, that's not how this shit works. We are no longer living as a spider society. When you hit the head, you fucking kill everything, right? Snake, same thing. You take a snake, yeah, it's even used in military discourse, right? You cut the head off a snake, you know, and you can just, you know, the rest of it falls out. No, we are living in a fucking starfish world and society. You cut one part off, that part, not only the part that you cut off, not only grows out, but and turns into another fucking starfish, but the part that you cut off is not just severed, it too grows out another limb. And it'll just be Vance and DeSantos. Can you imagine that, Vance and DeSantos? But I'm sure you can imagine it, given the place where we're at. Last thing I'll say is that even if he died tomorrow, and everyone that he's hired, because remember, every aspect of government is infiltrated right now with people who are horrible. Okay, that's just a fact. They believe the end of times, they believe the end of the world, and they're trying to usher it in. Even if all those people got out, just a beauty scenario, statistically, socially, psychologically, sociologically, economically, we cannot go back to where we were even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, even 2 years ago. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff with that I don't have the time to unpack it and explain it, but it's the way we progress. Any inkling towards change takes that same and equal pressure going back. You go too far over, you try to jump over those steps, genocide, war, famine. So we got some stuff. I'm laughing, but I'm really laughing somatically. It's a nervous laugh, fam. I'm just going to keep it 100 with y'all. All right. I've been talking too much. I know. I got a lot to say. We got a great season. There are some authors that I interviewed, and it's just interesting, right? I do think that in the Academy, there are still a lot of people operating under the guise that if I just write one more book, this will do it, right? If I just put this out, things will change. And I've been guilty of that. I put Soul of Hip Hop out. I was like, oh, this is going to change lives. Shit. Motherfucker. I remember when I tried to sell those things and no one fucking showed up. I think I had one person show up, right? You know, so anyways, here we go, fam. Here we go. Gird your loins. Get ready. As long as they got me on the air, I'm going to keep putting this stuff out. I want to talk a little bit more about homesteading as well, and not the homesteading where, you know, you got your kid and it's been homeschooled. I'm actually talking about, again, basic survival needs. Because it goes more well beyond just having a weapon in front of you. You know, if we're thinking about life, things are going to change. Even if you just say, I'm just going to sit there and allow things to happen to me, I have enough privilege. By the time they get to me, the United States will have invaded and they'll take over and I'll just be okay. Because that happened in Germany. There were German citizens that they never got touched. I mean, yeah, there were air raids or whatever and stuff like that, but they just kind of continued in life. So what are we going to do? I don't know. Here we go. Yes, the future. All right, fam. Well, listen in, subscribe, like, all that shit. And we'll see you soon.
The old world is dying, and the new world struggles to become born. Now is the time of monsters. Antonio Gramsci. The future.
Year is 2051. The United States of America exists only in history books. There was no civil war. No invasion, no single moment when America ended. Just a slow fracturing that became too obvious to deny. The constitutional crisis of 2028 was the first crack. 7 states refused to certify federal election results. The concept of a united country became fiction. The federal debt default of 2031 shattered the dollar's global status. By 2035, the water wars erupted. Southwestern states broke federal water sharing agreements. Survival outweighed union. The West Coast separated first, a digital republic bound to Asian markets. The Southern Coalition assembled around Texas, a nation of faith, oil, and armed borders. Their laws cite scripture where federal precedents once stood. The Atlantic Union formed from the Northeast, a banking federation connected to Europe, not the American interior. Their aging population embraced technocracy over democracy. liberty redefined as efficient management. The Midwest fragmented into isolated territories. Some thrived as agricultural city-states. Others collapsed as water grew scarce. Suburbs became fortified communities. Highways became trade routes with checkpoint tolls. The transition happened in everyday moments no one noticed. Interstate travel required enhanced identification in 2033. Regional currencies appeared by 2037. School maps were redrawn in 2042. Family reunions became international events by 2045. American became a historical term by 2049. The National Archives Battle of 2040 saw regions fighting over the Constitution and Declaration. The documents now rotate between capitals like relics of a fallen civilization. Washington, D.C. stands as a neutral museum district. The National Mall has become a memorial park to a nation that once was. The most striking aspect of America's end was how normal it felt. Each step seemed reasonable. Each region's complaints seemed justified. By the time maps were redrawn, citizens had already accepted the new reality. Rome's fall happened gradually, then suddenly. The Soviet collapse occurred the same way. America's dissolution followed the pattern. A nation that spanned a continent disappeared while everyone was watching. The dissolution wasn't marked by a final battle or surrender ceremony. It ended with a quiet admission that America had already been gone for years. The flag still flew, the anthem still played, the pledge still recited. But the nation they represented had vanished, not destroyed by enemies, but dissolved by its own citizens who stopped believing they were one people.